U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken responds to Hamas's ceasefire response.
Based on what we've seen and what I've discussed with the Prime Minister and what we've discussed with our Egyptian colleagues, we're determined to try to bridge the gaps.
Plus, Hungary says it won't stand in the way of NATO providing aid to Ukraine.
Today, the Prime Minister and I have agreed on modalities for Hungary's non-participation in NATO support to Ukraine.
Inter-Korean relations continue sinking to their lowest point in years.
The leaflet launches are unlikely to stop. Some activists appear emboldened.
Today is Thursday, June 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hi, everyone. I'm Steve Miller. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says Hamas had proposed, quote, numerous changes in its response to a ceasefire proposal. He noted that some of the changes were workable, but others were not.
Based on what we've seen and what I've discussed with the Prime Minister and what we've discussed with our Egyptian colleagues, we're determined to try to bridge the gaps. And I believe those gaps are bridgeable.
Blinken was speaking to reporters in Qatar on his eighth visit to the region since the start of the war. He said that the United States and its partners were working on a post-war plan and that they would put forward, quote, proposals for key elements of the day-after plan, including concrete ideas for how to manage governance, security, and reconstruction, end quote. Hezbollah also vowed to intensify its attacks along the Lebanon-Israel border to avenge the killing of its most senior military commander by Israel since the latest round of violence began 8 months ago. The coffin of Talib Sami Abdullah was brought to Hezbollah's stronghold in southern Beirut for a ceremony attended by hundreds of Hezbollah supporters and senior officials. Abdullah was killed in an airstrike late Tuesday. In Geneva, a UN inquiry found on Wednesday that both Israel and Hamas had committed war crimes in the early stages of the war in Gaza, and that Israel's actions also constituted crimes against humanity because of the immense civilian losses. Reuters' Olivia Chan continues her coverage.
The findings were from two parallel reports published by the UN Commission of Inquiry, one focusing on the October 7th Hamas attacks and another on Israel's military response in Gaza. Israel did not cooperate with the commission, which it says has an anti-Israeli bias. Israel's diplomatic mission to the UN in Geneva rejected the findings. Hamas did not immediately respond to a request for comment. According to Israeli tallies, 1,200 people were killed and about 250 were taken hostage in the October 7th attack. The Palestinian Health Ministry says the military retaliation in Gaza has since killed over 37,000 people. The reports, which cover the conflict through the end of December, found that both sides committed war crimes, including torture, murder or willful killing, outrageous upon personal dignity, and inhuman or cruel treatment. The report added Israel also committed additional war crimes, including starvation as a method of warfare. The COI statement said some of the war crimes, such as murder, also constituted crime against humanity by Israel, using a term reserved for the most serious international crimes knowingly committed as part of a widespread or systematic attack against civilians. On the report on the October 7th attack, the commission verified four incidents of mass killings in public shelters. It said that suggests militants had standing operational instructions. It also identified a pattern of sexual violence by Palestinian armed groups, but could not independently verify reports of rape. The evidence gathered by such UN-mandated bodies has sometimes formed the basis for war crimes prosecutions and could be drawn on by the International Criminal Court. In May, the ICC Prosecutor's Office has requested arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his Defense Chief Yoav Gallant. The COI findings will be discussed by the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva next week.
Reuters reporter Olivia Chan. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden shares with us that humanitarian aid is again flowing over the U.S. temporary pier just off the coast of Gaza, but it's not getting far.
more than 500 metric tons of aid on Tuesday and another more than 500 metric tons Wednesday. The first deliveries since crossings over the temporary pier were suspended due to bad weather.
The good news is that it's on the beach, so it's a step closer to getting to the people who need it most.
Only Pentagon Deputy Press Secretary Sabrina Singh says the badly needed aid has yet to go any further.
It's just being collected in the marshalling area, getting ready.
The reason? The United Nations World Food Program, one of the organizations responsible for getting the aid into the hands of Palestinians in Gaza, suspended further delivery after saying its warehouses were struck by rockets late last week.
The WFP, of course, is taking the security measures that they need to do and the reviews that they need to do in order to feel safe and secure and to operate within Gaza. We're not standing in the way of that.
The Pentagon, Singh says, for now, the U.S. will focus on getting more aid from Cyprus to the temporary pier and to Gaza so that it's there once the additional deliveries resume. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
We're also following these stories from around the world. Muslim pilgrims have begun streaming into Saudi Arabia's holy city of Mecca for the Hajj. Saudi officials say more than 1.5 million foreign pilgrims have arrived thus far. More are expected, and officials expect that the number could exceed the 1.8 million participants in 2023. At least 49 people were killed in Kuwait after a fire broke out in the building housing foreign workers. Kuwait's deputy prime minister accused property owners of committing violations that contribute to such incidents. It was not immediately clear if any violations had taken place at the building or what they allegedly were. We now continue with our ongoing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election with this story from VOA's Scott Stearns, explaining that the issue of guns continue to divide Americans. U.S. President Joe Biden wants a ban on assault weapons, while his opponent Donald Trump says Biden is threatening the constitutional rights of gun owners.
President Joe Biden told gun control activists in Washington Tuesday that he needs their help to strengthen gun laws.
We need you to overcome the unrelenting opposition of the gun lobby, gun manufacturers, so many politicians when they oppose common sense gun legislation.
Biden called for a federal ban on assault weapons and criticized Republican opponents for trying to close the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, which is responsible for fighting gun crime.
You can't be pro-law enforcement and say you are pro-law enforcement and be pro-abolishing the AFT. You can't do it. It's outrageous.
Nearly a third of Americans say they have a gun, according to the Pew Research Center. Donald Trump told America's largest gun lobby in May that Biden wants to take away those guns.
If the Biden regime gets four more years, they are coming for your guns, 100% certain.
Trump says gun rights in the U.S. Constitution's Second Amendment would be guaranteed by his election, but threatened by Biden's election.
If they get in, our country is going to be destroyed in so many ways, but the Second Amendment will be, it's under siege. But with me, they never get anywhere.
Trump told the National Rifle Association that gun owners will make him a winner in November.
These are great patriots. These are great people. And we're going to do things like nobody can believe. We're going to win this election at levels that nobody's ever seen before.
Trump's record on gun control as president is reason not to reelect him, Biden says.
Our predecessor told the NRA convention recently. He's proud that, quote, I did nothing on guns when I was president. And by doing nothing, he made the situation considerably worse.
Biden spoke about guns Tuesday on the same day his son Hunter was convicted on charges including illegally purchasing a gun. Joe Biden did not speak about his son's convictions, but did issue a written statement saying he'll accept the outcome of this case and continue to respect the judicial process. Hunter Biden is the first child of a sitting U.S. president to be convicted of a crime and is scheduled to stand trial on separate federal tax fraud charges in September. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. In Europe, Russian forces have launched deadly new attacks on Ukraine, killing at least 9 people a day before G7 leaders will meet to discuss how to slow Moscow's offensive. Ukrainian authorities say that along with 9 people killed, 29 were wounded when Russian missiles hit an apartment block in Kyiv, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's hometown. We hear now more from Anna Chernikova on additional Russian attacks.
Russian forces launched a massive missile and drone attack in the early hours of Wednesday, targeting Kyiv and the Kyiv region, as well as the central and eastern regions of Ukraine. Throughout the night, Ukrainians heard the sound of air raid alerts and air defense mixed with powerful thunder and lightning. At one point, those sounds were mixed and created a feeling of being inside of a horror movie. The shelling stopped around 4:30 a.m. local time on Wednesday. It was a sleepless night for the citizens of Kyiv, as the capital and the outskirts were one of the main targets of the attack. As a result of the attack, a fire broke out at an industrial facility in the Kyiv region caused by the debris fall. One person was injured. No hits on residential areas or critical infrastructure were recorded. In other news, there is a new department in the Armed Forces of Ukraine. It was announced Wednesday that Deputy Commander-in-Chief Vadim Sukharevsky will head the newly created Unmanned Systems Forces. Sukharevsky is a well-known Ukrainian military man who was the first to open fire on Russian troops in 2014 near Slavyansk at the beginning of the war. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan also announced that the United States imposed nearly 300 new sanctions against Russia on Wednesday.
These actions will ratchet up the risk that foreign financial institutions take by dealing with Russia's war economy. The Department of Treasury is making clear that foreign banks risk being sanctioned for dealing with any entity or individual blocked under our Russia sanctions, including designated Russian banks.
Wednesday's package largely aimed to deter individuals and companies in countries like China, the United Arab Emirates, and Turkey from helping Moscow circumvent Western blocks on obtaining key technology. In addition, Hungary also agreed not to block NATO from giving support to Ukraine, but will also not provide any personnel or funds to help the war-ravaged country.
Today, the Prime Minister and I have agreed on modalities for Hungary's non-participation in NATO support to Ukraine.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg.
It's not a NATO obligation to participate in all NATO missions and operations or activities, as long as all NATO's allies adhere to the core obligations in the Washington Treaty, our collective defense, our security guarantees.
NATO makes all of its decisions by consensus, effective giving any one of the 32 allies a veto. And at a summit in Washington next month, U.S. President Joe Biden and his NATO counterparts are expected to agree on a new system for providing more predictable and long-term security assistance and military training to Ukraine's beleaguered armed forces. Meanwhile, inter-Korean relations continue sinking to their lowest level in years as both countries intensify cross-border psychological warfare. VOA's Bill Gallo has that story.
South Korea's military is tracking not missiles, but balloons. North Korea has sent thousands in waves, scattering trash across the South, and in some cases, dropping feces. It's a symbolic protest against South Korean activists who send forbidden materials into the North. For North Korea's leaders, any unapproved content is an existential threat. Chad O'Carroll is the founder of NK News.
Outside information is really ideological contamination. It's like a cancer, and it's a serious Achilles heel for Kim Jong-un.
That weakness is being exploited by South Korea, which is now blaring propaganda across the border. Those loudspeakers were last used 6 years ago. North Korea has installed its own speakers, a tit-for-tat escalation. Though all is quiet for now, many residents are concerned. Nam Song-jun is a Gimpo resident. He says people are anxious, and he served in the military, so he thinks about how much trouble soldiers on the front lines are going through right now. Song Mo-ran is a Seoul resident. She says it's stupid to resort to doing the same thing as the other person. She hopes we can sit down and talk to each other soon. In 2020, North Korea destroyed an inter-Korean office as part of a backlash against South Korean leaflets. North Korea has also fired toward loudspeakers in the past. Kim Byung-ju is a South Korean lawmaker. He says the two Koreas are playing a game of chicken, like a runaway train. We keep doing this power-for-power confrontation, he says. He's very worried about tensions. But the leaflet launches are unlikely to stop. Some activists appear emboldened.
For balloon launchers that rely upon a lot of reporters coming out to a pre-announced launch, this is a boon for them.
Pastor Eric Foley operates more quietly, sending Bibles to what he says are North Korea's underground Christians. He disputes the idea that tensions would improve if the launches stopped.
That kind of trickle-down view on human rights hasn't proven to be effective so far. It hasn't proven to improve the relations between the countries or improve the situation of North Koreans.
For now, inter-Korean interaction amounts to exchanges of poop-filled balloons and propaganda, a depressing low point that many fear could soon get lower. Bill Gallo, BOA News, Paju, South Korea.
Addressing the UN Security Council, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk called North Korea, quote, a stifling, claustrophobic environment where life is a daily struggle devoid of hope, end quote.
Arbitrary detention, torture, and ill treatment, as well as a lack of fair trials, are ongoing tactics of repression. I've also consistently raised the tragic issue of enforced disappearance, both inside the DPRK and of citizens of other countries, notably the Republic of Korea and Japan.
Elizabeth Salmon, special rapporteur on the situation on human rights in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, which is North Korea's official name, added,
the continued prioritization of its military, nuclear, and missile programs places a high military burden on its people and disproportionately affects those most vulnerable, such as children and women.
She also said, quote, looking back at the past 4 years of the border closures, the human rights situation has undeniably deteriorated. We are facing probably the worst humanitarian crisis since the disastrous famine in the late 1990s, end quote. North Korea has repeatedly rejected accusations of abuses and blamed sanctions for its dire humanitarian situation. Australia's National Science Agency also warns that a lack of scientists specialized in plant breeding could lead to dire food security implications around the world. Phil Mercer has more.
A joint paper published earlier this month by the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization in collaboration with Lincoln University in New Zealand and McGill University in Canada warns that highly skilled plant breeding experts who are reaching the end of their careers aren't being replaced by sufficient numbers of university graduates. Lucy Egan is the study's lead author.
So plant breeding is a slow game. It takes a long time to develop a new crop variety. So you're looking at least 10 years on average to develop a new variety. When you have a lack of plant breeders coming through to replace the generation that are retiring, it does generate a bit of concern around the succession plan.
The report said that the implications of a skill shortage could be dire and that global food security could be affected. It recommends establishing dedicated training facilities in different countries. Egan says that plant breeding can help countries adapt to a warming climate.
I think plant breeding is really the backbone of the agricultural sector.
The research is published in the journal Crop Science. It reports that since the 1960s, global crop production has increased by more than 250%, which is due in large part to plant breeding science. Phil Mercer, VOA News, Sydney.
And turning to the entertainment industry, from male drivers in wigs to performers painted different skin tones, female stunt drivers say that better representation is needed in their industry. Reuters' Ardi Tayaparin brings us this story of the first stunt group for professional female performers to round us out.
All right, ladies, let's go.
In These stunt performers say Hollywood has a problem with representation.
When I came out of a not-so-great production meeting about a commercial, when the producer said, oh, I didn't know there were female drivers, we just put a guy in a wig.
Oh, yeah, there's way more males in the stunts than females.
There's not just one white guy who can double everybody.
And after years of being looked over for top roles, they're banding together to fix it. Meet the Association of Women Drivers, or AWD, the first ever stunt group for professional female performers. AWD was founded by Olivia Summers, whose credits over her nearly 20-year career include Bridesmaids and The Flight Attendant. Aside from male stunt drivers being cast to double for female actors, she said there is also an issue with paint downs.
A paint down is when they paint the stunt performer black or brown to double the actor that just may be African American or brown.
The Screen Actors Guild, which represents Hollywood's stunt performers, told Reuters there are guidelines on paint downs. They added that 1/4 of their performers identify as female. The guild has rules stating productions must fill female roles with female stunt performers. But Summers said some stunt coordinators bypass it by saying they've exhausted all means to find a suitable performer.
We all train. We all take the time to perfect our craft. So use everybody.
For stunt driver Ashley Tave, more diverse representation means a better outcome for everyone involved.
It also makes the actors more comfortable when they know that there's somebody looking like them who can do the job instead of, oh, this is going to be unrealistic because they have a white guy doubling me, so the audience isn't going to believe that a black girl can drive.
She says she uses that frustration to motivate her.
I can't always blame it on, hey, they didn't know about me, because there's so many people in this industry, but it just motivates you to work harder, train more, and get your name out there.
Arti Tarapiran of Reuters News. And on behalf of everyone at VOA, we thank you for joining us. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On May 10th, the Russian Federation launched an offensive against the Kharkiv region of Ukraine, said U.S. Alternative Representative for Special Political Affairs at the UN, Robert Wood. The world witnessed the havoc and destruction that followed. Russia's missiles have hit apartment buildings, shopping centers, and book publishing facilities. Russia's missiles pounded Kharkiv's energy system in a continuation of its practice of attacking civilian infrastructure. Indeed, May was the deadliest month for civilian casualties in Ukraine since June 2023, according to the United Nations. More than half of these casualties can be attributed to the fighting in Kharkiv. Russia, said Ambassador Wood, continues to deny international monitors and humanitarian organizations access to the Ukrainian territory it occupies, as well as to facilities in Russia holding prisoners of war and Ukrainian civilians.
Putin has no regard for Russia's obligations under the Geneva Conventions, given the haggard, beaten, and malnourished bodies of prisoners of war returned to Ukraine on May 31, following the first prisoner swap in months.
Russia also continues its forcible transfer and deportation of Ukrainian children as part of a systematic campaign to strip the most vulnerable victims of this war of their Ukrainian identity, said Ambassador Wood.
Vulnerable children were taken from Ukrainian caregivers and relocated to Russia. In many instances, these children were provided with Russian names and passports and adopted by Russians. These transfers are not humanitarian in nature. They may amount to war crimes. The forcible changing of names and nationality is a blatant violation of international law.
The evidence of Russia's war crimes is well documented, staggering, and mounting every day. Nevertheless, Ukraine continues to develop a formula for a just and durable peace that is in line with the principles of the UN Charter, said Ambassador Wood.
We call on all countries to support Ukraine's pursuit of a just and lasting peace, consistent with the principles and purposes of the UN Charter.
We regret Russia has shown no support or readiness for good faith negotiations or engagement on a durable peace, said Ambassador Wood. The United States will stand by Ukraine as it seeks a just and lasting peace. We will continue to call for justice for the victims of this war of aggression and to work for accountability for those responsible.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.